We're going to read this morning from verses 9 and 10 of chapter 29, Explanation of Devotional Service. Beginning of the chapter, Devahuti's asked a series of questions, one of them being, you've described about the process of philosophical understanding, Sankhya philosophy, analysis of matter and spirit, but the fruit of any philosophical system, including Sankhya, is devotion. So can you describe devotion, devotional service? And several other questions. So in response, Kapila said, sure, I can describe devotional service. Devotional service is multifaceted. There's, although devotional service is pure, depending upon the mode of nature with which one is contaminated and impelled, and depending upon the intention behind one's rendering devotional service within a particular mode of nature, it's variegated. So where the discussion is headed is pure devotional service that's unmixed, because bhakti, bhakti is pure, like Krishna is pure. Bhakti, like Krishna, cannot be contaminated. But consciousness of the soul certainly can be contaminated, influenced by the modes of nature. And so the way in which the conditioned soul renders devotional service, their consciousness may be in that mixed state, and therefore we speak of devotional service in these various ways. So we started with that frame. Kapila Dev started by describing devotional service in the lower region, within devotional service within ignorance. And in ignorance is characterized by without compassion. And then there's varieties of how people can be without compassion. Envious, proud, violent, angry. In this verse, the text 8, which is dealing with the one who is influenced by the mode of ignorance, there's the Sanskrit phrase is bhina drik. Bhina means separated. It's important because it comes up in the next verse too. So bhina, separated, or bhina drik. Drik means to see, one whose vision is separate. Prabhupada explains, there's the interest of the Supreme Lord, and then there's the interest of the person who's engaged in devotional service that has an interest separate from the interest of the Lord. And it may, you know, it may be of this, that, and the other variety. We discussed more specifically from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in, you know, lower, intermediate, and higher within the mode of ignorance category. So that just, this is just review, because it becomes important to understand the rest of what's going to be presented. There's an intention behind a particular conditioned soul's rendering of service within a particular mode. So that now we're going to move to Kapila Dev's describing in those who are moved by the mode of passion, and then the interest of those moved by the mode of passion may be diverse. And in text 9, similar to but a little different from a bina drik, is pratak bhava. I looked up the from a folio search, pratak, what does that mean? Depending upon the circumstance, it means slightly different things, but it again, it's the same idea of separate. But it's a different kind of separate than the mode of ignorance kind of separate. It's more of a fruitive spirit, at least in application here, because it's connected with the mode of passion. Pratak bhava is in the Sanskrit of the verse. Pratak bhava sa rajasaha. Those who are in the mode of passion are separatists, and we'll hear what Prabhupada writes about a separatist in text 9 purport. So here's the translation of text 9. The worship of deities in the temple by a separatist with a motive for material enjoyment, fame, and opulence is devotion in the mode of passion. This is from Srimad Bhagavatam. The position of Satrajit is a nice example. He wasn't worshipping the Supreme Lord, but he was worshipping Suryadev, and he wanted opulence. Suryadev gave it to him in the form of the Shamantaka jewel, the jewel that's not of this world. It's up in the heavenly realm, and he gave it to him. It could produce this and that. It gets 70 pounds of gold every day. Is that right? 70 or 140? A lot of gold every day. Some large quantity of gold. And people that worship Suryadev may also want good health. So one's health would be maintained, and there would be no irregularities in climate and circumstance. Everything would be nice. We could use the Shamataka jewel these days in Kali Yuga. So this is the devotional service. Devotion in the mode of passion, purport. The word, quote, separatist must be understood carefully. The Sanskrit words in this connection are bina drik from the previous verse, and here it's pratak bhava. A separatist is one who sees his interest as separate from that of the Supreme Lord. Mixed devotees, or devotees in the modes of passion and ignorance, think that the interest of the Supreme Lord is supplying the orders of the devotee. The interest of such devotees is to draw from the Lord as much as possible for their sense gratification. This is the separatist mentality. Actually, pure devotion is explained in the previous chapter. There's a colon in the previous chapter, colon. The mind of the Supreme Lord and the mind of the devotee should be dovetailed. A devotee should not wish anything but to execute the desire of the Supreme. That is oneness. When the devotee has an interest or will different from the interest of the Supreme Lord, his mentality is that of a separatist. When the so-called devotee desires material enjoyment without reference to the interest of the Supreme Lord, or he wants to become famous, this is mentioned in the verse, or opulent by utilizing the mercy or grace of the Supreme Lord, he is in the mode of passion. I mean, specifically, it speaks of one who worships deities. So someone may worship the deity because I know if I do so, wealth will come. I know if I do so, I may become famous as, oh, here's a nice worshipper of the deity, nice pujari. But motivated in those kinds of ways, in, it's a devotional service and passion. Like visiting some of the temples in Vrindavan, it's, you don't go there even because they're so greedy. It's not about, you know, the worship of the deity, it's about lining their pockets. It's awful. Okay, so second paragraph, Mayavadis, however, interpret this word separatist in a different way. They say that while worshipping the Lord, one should think of himself as one with the Supreme Lord. This is another adulterated form of devotion within the modes of material nature. The conception that the living entity is one with the Supreme is in the mode of ignorance. Oneness is actually based upon oneness of interest. A pure devotee has no interest but to act on behalf of the Supreme Lord. One who has even a tinge of personal interest, his devotion is mixed with the three modes of material nature. So this is outlining again, as with the previous verse, the principle of what's this idea of mixed, what's the idea of a separatist, what's the idea of not having a separate interest. It's making it very clear because it's easily wrongly understood, misunderstood. And second is the focus on what's the goal. I mean, the last sentence is kind of maybe either embarrassing or even discouraging. As long as there's even the slightest separate interest, then this is it's not pure devotion. So, and say it conversely, unless one is a pure devotee, one will have separate interest. And that may be discouraging, but another way to look at it is that's our conditioned state, and it's perfectly understandable, natural. You know, the very fact that we're in a material existence means we have interests separate from the Lord. We wouldn't have a material body. We wouldn't take birth. Anybody that has one of these, Prabhupada said, is like a flag flapping in the wind. I have separate interests from the Supreme Lord. That's what the body is. So now what to do about that? We try to cleanse that separate interest from the Supreme Lord. And the separate interest from the Supreme Lord agitates the mind. Like, you know, the mind is restless, and when we chant, it's all over the place. Because the chanting is bringing the mind to the Supreme Lord, and the mind wants to go all over the place because it has separate interest. It's just, you know, the contamination of the mind. And from that, you know, the contamination of the senses and the whole picture of material existence. So we're undergoing a process that's intended to purify. That's the bhakti process. In the previous chapter, which Prabhupada makes reference to, the mind that's completely harmonious with the mind of the Supreme Lord, they're one in interest. That with that process for Satya Yuga is the process of meditation. And our process in this age is the whole chanting of the holy name. So the taming of the restless mind has as its objective becoming attracted to the all-attractive instead of distracted by the temporary. And that's our purification. Inviting Krishna to attract us fully once again and become simultaneously engaged in his service. Engage the senses in the service of the master of the senses. That's our process. And the primary cleansing agent is the holy name, the Maha Mantra. And in that way, the separate interest contamination can be relieved. So now next is text 10, the mode of goodness. Language is very interesting. The manifestation of unadulterated devotional service is exhibited when one's mind... We got ahead of ourselves. That's unmixed devotional service. Here's mixed with goodness. Here we go. When a devotee, text 10, worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offers the results of his activities in order to free himself from the inebrieties of fruitive activities, his devotion is in the mode of goodness. It's not the unmixed that's described in the previous chapter where the mind is absorbed. It's, I wish to become free from the implications of matter. Like chapter 3, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna outlines the living entity with material body. As soon as we do something, the material body, we have to act even just to maintain our lives, and as soon as we act, then we're implicated in a reaction. So we can't not act, and if we act, we're implicated in reaction. It's like damned if you do and damned if you don't kind of language. So what to do? Well, one thing to do is, the liberationist idea is, I don't want the bondage, so offer the result to the Supreme, and I'll be free from bondage. So the motivation is, I want liberation. I'm a liberationist. I don't want the fruitive bondage. I want the liberation position. So one eschews or rejects the passion mode and favors instead the liberation notion, and I offer the results to the Supreme. So this is devotion in the mode of goodness. I'm going to read what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, because I find his commentaries fantastic, but it's also interesting in comparison to see how Prabhupada writes. He goes right into the Varnashram topic. It's a theme. It's something that Prabhupada wanted. It's something that the Vedic literature presents. And in ISKCON, we haven't really gotten it together so much. We don't pay so much attention to the Varnashram system. There are some members of our ISKCON leadership that are beating the drum and tooting the trumpet, saying we have to pay attention to this because it's our social structure. I mean, I just share with you. Shivaram Maharaj is one of the main advocates of this, and it's several things that he says repeatedly, because he's done this in practical terms at the farm community in Hungary. Nubrajadam is the name of their self-sufficient farm community, and part of the structure and the functioning of that community is identification, not artificially, but identification of functions and roles of different individuals according to Varnashram. So one of the things that he says is, we can just remain another religion, or we can be a society. And Prabhupada wanted an international society for Krishna consciousness, not just this religion, that religion, and here's another religion. And this is a society, has a social fabric. That's revolutionary. a social fabric that's conducive for God realization. It's nice sounding, and as far as he is concerned, it will elevate our effectiveness in being relatable and meaningful as a spiritual organization, not just another religion on the map, because we have social structure, and it's Krishna's social structure, Daivi Varnashram. Anyway, you'll hear some more about it as time passes, because he's going to continue to beat the drum and blare the trumpet. And we're welcoming it, because it's something that, here it is, right here in this purport. It's not mentioned in the verse, but it's Prabhupada's also, Varnashram. There's divisions of society, natural divisions. Krishna created them. He, little story, when Prabhupada went to Moscow, he was saying to Professor Katovsky, "You say classless society. Communism is a classless society. But I see when I go for walks in the morning, there's a lady sweeping the street, and there's a Kremlin diplomat riding in a big limousine, heading for the Kremlin. And people opening their shops. I see divisions of labor within your society. There's divisions of labor because they're natural. You don't have the sense of Varnashram. You don't have the concept of it. But it's there because it's Krishna's system." So, here's Prabhupada's description. "The Brahmanas, Kshatriya, Vaishyas, and Shudras, along with the Brahmacharis, Grihasthas, Vanaprasthas, and Sannyasis, are the members of the eight divisions of Varnas and Ashramas, and they have their respective duties to perform for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When such activities are performed and the results are offered to the Supreme Lord, they are called Karmarpanam." What does arpana mean? Worship, offering. Karmarpanam. You worship by offering your work and the fruits of your work to the Supreme. Duties performed for the satisfaction of the Lord. If there is any inebriety or fault, it is atoned for by this offering process. If this offering process is in the mode of goodness, rather than impure devotion, then the interest is different. So again, it's the same separatist. Darker, medium, lighter, but still separate interest. I want something. I want relief from the bondage of my doing something. So I make the offering because I want. The four ashrams and the four varnas act for some benefit in accordance with their personal interests. Therefore, such activities are in the mode of goodness, semicolon. They cannot be counted in the category of pure devotion. Pure devotional service is described by Rupa Goswami as free from any material desire. Who knows the verse? Anyabhilashita shunyam. Niraj, do you know the verse? Okay. So the first part is, as Prabhupada is paraphrasing, Anya Abhilas Shunya. Shunya, zero. No Anya Abhilas, no other desires. Which kind of desires? Karma and Jnana. Anavritam. Pure devotional service, as described by Rupa Goswami, is free from any material desire, all material desires. Anya abhilasha to shunyam. There can be no excuse for personal or material interest. Devotional activity should be transcendental to fruitive activities and empiric philosophical speculation. There we are. Gyan and karma. Pure devotional service is transcendental to all material qualities. So again, the theme here is we would like to get to, Kapila Dev would like to get us to the position of pure devotional service. So, as mentioned yesterday, there's a compare and contrast. There's pure devotional service, and we can understand what pure devotional service isn't. It's pure devotional service mixed with a separate desire than the desire of the Lord. That's not pure devotional service. So we want to get to the unmixed position. Then he goes through the last paragraph, is this calculation of 81, like we did yesterday. Three modes of nature, nine different processes, so 3 times 9 is 27. And then there's lower, intermediate, and upper divisions within each of those modes, sometimes another 3. 3 times 27 is 81. One has to transcend all such mixed materialistic devotional service in order to reach the standard of pure devotional service as explained in the next verses. So that's, as we discussed at the very beginning, where all of this is taking us. The whole of Kapila Dev's teaching is pure devotional service. Devahuti wants to know what's pure devotional service. Well, pure devotional service is pure, but our consciousness may not be. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he writes that this pratak bhava means he has desires for objects other than me. So, you know, the converse is pure is then when there isn't the desire for an object other than Krishna. So Krishna is the object of our covetousness. We wish to not own Krishna, but be in a relationship with Krishna, be in a service position in relation to Krishna, with nothing else. When we're observing Ram Navami just a few days ago, and in the Leela, Ramchandra's pastime of accepting Vibhishan, there's extensive commentary, especially from the Sri Vaishnava Acharyas, that when Vibhishan comes, there's 4 ministers that come with him. And the indication is these 4 ministers indicate that they're not like symbolic of, but they indicate that they're in the process of surrender. Vibhishan surrendering to Ram and Ram accepting his surrender. There's 2 particular elements that the person who's wishing to surrender or submitting themselves in surrender must have. And they're similar, but they're different. One is akinchanatvam. Akinchana means no material shelter. Queen Kunti uses that phrase in her prayers to Krishna. She says, those people who have the fruits of piety, janma, good birth, aishwarya, opulence, shruta, good education, shri, and beauty, it's very difficult for them to, they like to be the enjoyers of those things, so it's very difficult for them to feelingly offer prayers to you. They may religiously offer prayers, but they'll do it in one of these mixed ways. But to feelingly offer prayer, where akinchanatvam. So therefore she says that the one who is able to feelingly reach you, they have no material shelter. They're not aspiring for an object other than you. Although they may have objects around them. Like Ambarish Maharaj. It's described. He was more opulent His opulence was equal to that of Vaikuntha, more opulent than the heavenly planets. And he had no interest at all. He used it to serve as the king, to serve his citizens and serve the Supreme Lord. But he had no personal interest. He had one. So that's the other. Ananya Gati Tvam. Gati means goal or destination. There's only one place of shelter for me. Personality of Godhead. Ananya Gati Tvam. There's no other destination. One. No objects of coveting or wishing to be the enjoyer of, wishing to possess and be the enjoyer of. Akinchana Tvam. And Ananya Gati Tvam. There's one shelter. No other shelter. So that's what's being said here. That this pratak bhava or binadrik, there's some object, there's an aspiration for something. And once again, that's our conditioning we have. We say that we don't have, we're not introspecting properly, we're deluding ourselves. We have some. So now what to do? So we take that process of cleansing. And part of what we're doing right now, just the hearing and chanting, is part of that cleansing. Here's his translation for text 10. Excuse me, 9. And then we're done. Excuse me, it's 10. He who worships me with the desire to destroy karma, making his works an offering to the Supreme Lord, or executing the worship as a duty, having a desire for liberation, has sattvic bhakti. It's described a little differently elsewhere, but similar. You know, that devotional service and goodness is we do things because we should do things. You know, we do things out of duty. It ought to be done, and so I do. I speak the truth because you should speak the truth. I don't steal because you shouldn't steal. Just I do because that's proper. It's mode of goodness. And behind that, it should be done. Sense of duty. There's a driving force in the mode of goodness, and that's I desire liberation from this contaminated position of the material world. I want to move away from darkness. I want to move into this condition of free from lower contaminations. Anyway, it's by aspiration for liberation. It's a spiritual destination, but it's not yet pure devotion. Desire for liberation, say it again, is a spiritual aspiration. At least it can be. But it's not yet at the stage of pure devotion. We're going to hear tomorrow morning about what the pure devotion interest is. Okay, so here's the purport. Very interesting. Again, he's a different acharya. It's a different time, place, circumstance, a different audience. He's in Vrindavan. He's not speaking to the world that doesn't know anything about Krishna. He's speaking to the people of Vrindavan, his audience. And he wants those who are in his audience to be very clear what pure bhakti is, because they are engaged to some degree in something of devotion, but mixed. So that's the goal, is to bring that audience to unmixed. Of course, future generations may take his commentary and present it in different ways according to their time, place, circumstance. Anyway, here's how he writes. It's more detailed. He worships with the intention of destroying karma, His goal in bhakti is to destroy karma. Doesn't like karma. He worships in such a way that his actions are offered to the Lord. He performs bhakti of hearing and chanting, but filled with offering of occupational duty. He worships out of duty, having obtained rules for daily rites. He worships while performing his duties of his ashram, thinking that his worship is similar to his execution of ashram duties. Right? So one of the offenses against chanting is to consider the chanting of the holy name to be one of the karmakanda processes for material elevation. That worship is considered to be part and parcel of this is my duty, so I do my duty, rather than specifically pleasing the Supreme Lord. He has the desire for liberation, pratak bhava. Then he goes on. The nine types of bhakti, the nine limbs, hearing, chanting, remembering, so forth, have their successive superiority. One of the nine processes is tamasic, rajasic, and sattvic. They're in the progressive order, he says. Sattvic bhakti produces some sort of knowledge. We know that from first canto. Sutta Goswami says, Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janiyati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yadahaitukam. Knowledge comes directly from bhakti itself. It's devotional service to Vasudev. So some sort, depending on their position. Some sort of knowledge. When jnana is secondary and bhakti is primary or predominant, it is called jnana mishra bhakti. Bhakti that's mixed with knowledge, which produces shanti, rati, kind of peacefulness, or shanta, is, you know, neutrality. When is not attracted or repulsed by matter, which is a theme that's throughout Bhagavad Gita, sixth chapter, for the person who's doing meditation. They're not attracted by pebbles, stones, or gold. They're neutral. The shanta or shanti rati, beyond the three gunas. And again, when jnana predominates and bhakti is secondary, that's different. First was bhakti is primary, jnana is secondary. Now it's when jnana is secondary and bhakti is, when jnana is primary and bhakti is secondary, bhakti being a mere anga of jnana, then it produces sayuja mukti. So supposing I'm a person, my primary emphasis is I want liberation. Was it in this group that I was describing the eligibility of a person for bhakti according to 11th canto is there are persons who are too much attached and there's persons too detached, and bhakti is neither too attached nor too detached. Was that? Yes? Yes, okay. So jnana was when that's primary. Somebody may deploy some principles of bhakti to get liberation. They're too much detached. They're like, I want out of here. Repulsed. So that's not really bhakti. There's maybe some elements of the practices or activities of bhakti, but it's, the spirit isn't, I want to please the Supreme Lord, so I want liberation. So that the result of that is Sayuja Mukti. Bhakti mixed with karma, such as a horse sacrifice with the desire for material gain. With some offering of actions and attachment to results, but not offering all actions, produces salokya liberation with happiness and powers. It's detailed, as I said. Not like if you don't know all this stuff, you can't go back to Godhead. It's just helping his audience understand, look inside myself and see what my intention is, what my motivation is, where my consciousness is directed. We should do the same. And we don't need to know all these details. But it's to help us get to the point of unmixed devotion, and the destination of unmixed devotion is Goloka, not this Shanta or Salokya or something. Though rajasic and tamasic bhakti produce results, the performers generally get material results. However, the results will be greater than usual because of the power of bhakti. In terms of yielding devotional results, in some cases, such bhakti with time become pure bhakti. And then he quotes a verse from 5th Canto, chapter 19. That 5th Canto, chapter 19, it's a nice chapter. It begins with Hanuman's prayers to Lord Ram, and along with the residents of Kimpurusha Varsha, where he resides. It's nice. So it's the beginning of that stage is unmixed devotion. It's a very nice verse. It's a nice one to learn, or at least to remember. The Lord certainly gives desired objects to devotees who request them, but he does not give in such a way that the devotee will ask again after finishing his enjoyment. He gives his lotus feet, which include all desirables, to those worshippers who do not desire them. In Prabhupada's commentary to that verse, he says, Krishna considers, I am not such a fool. I'm not the kind of master that somebody wants something that's going to entangle them in material existence, and they say, oh, I'll give you something that will entangle you in material existence. Are you happy now? He doesn't do that. He considers, I'm not so foolish. I may give them something, but I'll give them that something in such a way they'll never desire that something again, because I'll give my two lotus feet, and their happiness and their purity will take them out of the desire from this temporary thing. I am that kind of master. And then he said, there's no better master than the Supreme Lord Krishna. He makes reference to Uddhava's comment about there's no better master than Krishna. Because when Putana came, somewhere over there was this maternal, I want to breastfeed Krishna. The rest of it was, I want to kill Krishna. But he just took that. I want to be the mother of Krishna, and gave her liberation. And Goloka Vrindavan is an eternal associate of Mother Yasoda, serving in that way. There can't be a better master than Krishna. So that's a nice example of bhakti has its power in Krishna. Bhakti to Krishna, or the Supreme Lord, has its power, and one is very fortunate to be connected with that. The process is designed to carry us to that position, back home, back to Godhead. And there's power within bhakti to do that. So reorienting our aspirations, or using the language that we used yesterday from Vishwanath, the intention, realigning our intentions in life, because where we start without association of devotees, our intentions are something else. It's without devotion to Krishna. We have our intentions. So then it's just realigning those intentions according to our nature. Eventually, refining and refining to the position of just Krishna. And whatever Krishna wants, I'm ready. I just want Krishna. So Krishna's desire becomes my desire. That alignment is our objective. Any questions? Yes. Even we may have material desires.
But in the activity, if there is even little intention to please Krishna, it comes on the path of the
devotion. To say the last, even there may be other desires, then what?
But if there is an intention to please Krishna.
If there is an intention to please Krishna.
Then it comes like as if we are on the path of pure devotion.
Yeah. That's. Nine 9.5 out of 10. A little editing. Maybe the simplest way. Well, I'll say two ways. Maybe the simplest way is to say there's a verse, and I'll send you the verse. It's from the 11th canto, chapter 20, I think. Krishna's teachings to Uddhava, where he is describing exactly what you're speaking about. A devotee who has some attraction for Krishna, desire to serve Krishna, and they have knowledge that material activities produce only misery, but nonetheless they still have some material desire. So that's like, the circumstance. And then Krishna says to Uddhava that devotee goes on with devotional service, acknowledging that those desires are there. They may even act on those desires that are there, knowing that the fruit of acting on those desires that are there will produce misery. But they go on with faith in the process of hearing and chanting. And then a nice purport to that verse. A second way is just a general description of what the anyabhilashita shunyam verse indicates. The verse is speaking of bhakti as without those things. At the same time, the subject matter of nectar devotion, which is expanding on that one verse, there's sadhana. So one may not be at the position where there's no material desire. Certainly that's the case in the sadhana bhakti stage. But one is undergoing the means for purification to go beyond those other desires, those anya abhilash things. So the requirement then for such a person is to accept there's a goal. I'm not there. I recognize a goal, I accept the goal, and I'm taking the means to get to the goal. And that's the sadhana. And so, meanwhile, those other desires, I'm trying to regulate them according to varna and ashram. Submitting those other desires to the regulation of that which is given by Krishna, how we're to regulate our lives. And this is exactly what Shivaram Maharaj speaks about with Daivi Varnashram. When we're literally beyond material desire, we don't need Daivi Varnashram. For the rest of us that are not literally beyond material desire, we need the regulation. So we submit ourselves to that code of theistic conduct to regulate those other desires. Daivi Varnashram means for the purpose of satisfying Krishna. And it's not yet pure devotional service. But it's practicing, that's the sadhana part, we're practicing that which is designed by Krishna to take us to pure devotional service. And we submit ourselves to those regulations. Then you go back to that Krishna's teaching to Uddhava in the 11th canto. Knowing by so doing, I'm implicating myself in complexities of matter. I'm not accruing more karma, but there's going to be misery. The road's not going to be free from bumps. But I'm acknowledging that there are other desires, and so I'm accepting the means that Krishna has given to frame my life where I'm living religiously and cultivating unmixed devotion. So it's not that Varnashram automatically delivers unmixed devotion, it's the cultivation towards unmixed devotion. And then there's the frame that one's life is fit in. The incubation chamber to cultivate that unmixed devotion. So the seed of bhakti is I wish to serve Krishna. And then nurturing of that seed is hearing and chanting, I wish to come to this unmixed devotion. Nothing else but. And meanwhile, there's something else. And I'm managing that in an appropriate fashion. The fashion that's given by Krishna to do so. Something else? Yes?
Adding one more question on that. So when we do that, if there is any chance to lose, like, fall down?
Oh, there's definitely a chance. And in fact, it happens. So we should be very careful. Yes?
You were mentioning something else along the lines of cultivating love for Krishna and devotees. A little bit more important than getting worked up into the technical side of things.
Yes.
And I was trying to think about certain parts of the Bhagavatam, go into depth about.
They sure do. So many things.
Right.
Like, make your head spin.
And I mean, for some people, it's very, enlightening. They get a lot of, out of it, but. For people like me, it kind of goes way over my head. It's a little bewildering. Sometimes it gets really dry. And so how do you balance the, For me, it's like, I should be focusing on something, How do I balance those?
Well, not exactly balance. It's understand. It's not only there, but it's there in a number of places extensively, which means it's important. So, why is it important? Well, it's one of the 10 main subject matters. It's to understand the connection of all things with the source. Okay, so I can just say, like some religions say, God created heaven and earth, period. Okay, what's next? But there's people that say rubbish. So what is our defense against people that say rubbish? Well, scripture says God created heaven and earth. That's our counter. Well, that's not, that's pretty weak-minded. So the detail is there so that one can understand it's not
It's not a whimsical sentiment that says God created heaven and earth. There's a detailed step by step by step. And in fact, it can withstand scrutiny by the finest of scientists. In fact, a little example of that was done, just as a detail. Our Bhaktivedanta Institute members in Berkeley. They have a branch in Berkeley, they have a branch in Rasarajan Company, have a branch in Juhu. So from their Berkeley activities, they made a friendship with Professor Henry Staff, S-T-A-P-H, who is a Nobel laureate in physics, I believe. And so they invited him, a paid sabbatical, to go to Juhu and for like 3 months study Sankhya philosophy, chapter 26, from the Bhagavatam. So he agreed to do that. And the assignment or the request was to see if there's anything falsifiable. That's a term that's used in science. You don't necessarily say this is true, but you say, from the information that modern science today knows, blah 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 cannot be falsified because there's no holes in it. It doesn't say it's true, just true. It's not falsifiable. So he ended up with it's not falsifiable. Very intense man. He was up before the devotees are up in the morning. And then worked. He didn't chant his 16 rounds or 10 Mangalarti, but he worked all day long. Very intense guy. Like, powerful intellect. And that, he wrote a little book at the end detailing not falsifiable what he found. So there's strength of conviction in the whole of the Vedic wisdom by understanding the detail of how the process of creation takes place. And then there's another dimension that Prabhupada writes about in the beginning of twice in the beginning of these sections. The Sanskrit of the Bhagavatam is Leela. This is one of the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. We're interested in his Leela. Sometimes we're only interested in, you know, the other kind. Some people are only interested in Rasa Leela. But it's the creation is one of his pastimes, and because it's in relation to the Lord, we're interested. Those are some reasons. So now, your question was, how do you balance? Well, it's not like you can't go back to God if you don't understand all that stuff. Or you can't go back to God if you don't develop a taste for all that stuff. But it's empiric information that can be verified. In one purport, Prabhupada writes that vast scientific experimentation can be generated just from this knowledge. There's a particular verse where he writes like that, a purport where he writes like that. So some persons have a taste for those things. The people that are into intelligent design. I mean, there's one gentleman who's in this little video about intelligent design advocates. He has spent 40 years of his life studying E. coli bacteria. That's, you know, a scientist. Can you imagine spending 40 years studying an E. coli bacteria? That's what you do. You know, and with minute, and he's described, we know so much about, you know, how many different types of protein, how many different motor parts there are, and the flagella of the E. coli bacteria. They know all about it. Now, so you and I may not be interested in spending 40 years doing that. But one who has, then reaches a certain conclusion. And the conclusion is it didn't happen by accident. Because there are persons that say that. I mean, like, that's the ruling teaching that you learn in science class. Mandatory. You get the idea. I could elaborate further, but you get the idea. It's there so that we stand on firm ground from the Bhagavatam. It's verifiable, or at least for sure, it's not falsifiable, empiric information on the Leela of the Lord creating. So then when we speak about the Leela of the Lord in the spiritual world, it's not just fairy tale or mythology. As this is verifiable, that can also, there's a process to verify the Leela of the Lord, that would require spiritual qualification. Like it does, you know, to understand all the motor parts of an E. coli flagella. You have to have a certain qualification to understand that stuff. Okay. Anything else? Yes?
In Krishna consciousness, I'm just trying to understand. I think everybody tries to develop the Vaishnava quality.
Mm.
So, how the devotees are really following Vaishnava?
How are they really following?
I am
accidentally more than, you know, deliberately. By that I mean, we each have our nature and we're acting according to our nature. Like Prabhupada's example of in Moscow, there's a lady sweeping the street and the man riding the limousine to go to the Kremlin. The man going to the Kremlin isn't thinking, I'm doing my Kshatriya Dharma. And the lady sweeping the street isn't thinking, I'm doing my Shudra Dharma. They're just doing. So then doing consciously may take some time of understanding the system. What are my duties according to my nature? What's my nature? So it's not clear because while Prabhupada speaks about it, it hasn't been well developed how to practically apply it, which is a concern for certain persons. Some persons, it's not a big concern. We just go on. We just do according to our nature. And others say, you know, no, we need to have this clarified. Not like pigeonhole people or according to birth or something like that. It's because it is fluid, but we also have our natures and we have conditioning of desires and how to properly regulate them in a social context. And if we don't have that, we'll have more problems. Because people don't know what they're to do, given their situation with desires and etc. What's proper, what's not proper, what's to be done, what's not to be done in a social context. Now, then a whole other thing is, even if people know what's to be done, do they have the discipline to do it? That's a whole other thing. But so, it's a social structure. And that's so. People that do have the discipline to do, then they can set the example of what to do. And one really simple one, kind of like the grain of rice in the pot, there was a time, in fact there's a painting, may even be a photograph, and then a painting made of the photograph. Prabhupada, there's Mayapur. There's the Mayapur building being put up that now is the Lotus building, but then it was the temple. And all you look in any direction, it was just agricultural fields in all directions. There was Prabhupada walking from the temple to his where his little grass hut was by the gate, with one of the devotees. So Prabhupada walking with one of the devotees. In the background, you see somebody plowing a field behind an oxen. And that somebody that was plowing the field was Shri Pathaka Maharaj when he was a young man. And not like, you know, Prabhupada understood that, you know, his nature is he's a Vaishya, so he should plow the field. Rather, Prabhupada was explaining, we have to show by example. Because there was a fascination with getting tractors and stuff, so let us show how we can plow the field with oxen. So he gave that assignment to Jai Pathakma, so he learned how to do it. In devotion. So that's, you get the idea. There's a structure, and we're not there yet. What and how? So some persons, I can't, you know, there may be others that I don't know about, but the most strong advocate and has practically done in Hungary is Shivaram Maharaj, and he's going to help us reach more clarity. I've invited him as a guest speaker at our GBC meeting in August. He's going to make a presentation on this, and it's going to be live streamed and all that. It's just groundbreaking with this topic that we should know more about and be acting on more, and we're not. Something else? Yes?
The
process of Krishna consciousness is how to overcome. By hearing, chanting, that, and that way getting purification, and then having an understanding of the difference. Most people don't have an understanding even that there's a difference. You have an understanding of difference. How did that come about? By hearing and chanting and purification. And then comes the application in that purified state. And then, you know, there's the, like the example from Nectar Devotion of a child learning to walk. The child tumbles and falls many times before they can actually walk on their own. So we do the same thing in trying to go outside of the doership mentality. We remember for about 3 seconds and then we tumble again. But you just get back up, and in other words, acting not in doership mentality is our nature. The other is our diseased condition. So act in a healthy way, and gradually, you know, it how to becomes clear by making the effort to do so. The realization comes by the effort, making the effort to do so. With proper direction and a heart that's pure. It's not easy. It takes devotional effort, sustained devotional effort. What's to be done, and striving by right means to do that. If we're lazy, we won't. And if we're sincere under devotion, we'll continue to try. And continue to try and continue to try and continue to try. Krishna will see that effort and he'll help. That's my understanding of how to. By the process of Krishna consciousness. You had something?
Yes. It's a ground zero question.
Ground zero question.
So for most of the questions, since the devotees association is an answer, so I want you if you could say a few things about what's the association of devotees and what should one do, what should one expect, what it means.
Well, I'll invite you to read Canto 3, Chapter 25, verses, I think it's 21 through 29. I'll check, but I think it's that. There's a whole section where Kapila Dev answers that question. First is understanding how to identify who is a devotee. What are the qualifications? What are the symptoms of that entity, a devotee? And then association with the devotee, what does that look like? You know, we primarily engaged in hearing and chanting together. That's the foundation. And then from that foundation we do various services. Someone's cooking, someone's cleaning, someone's greeting. Someone's, you know, we have different services that we do in relation to one another. Assisting one another to hear and apply the topics of Krishna in our lives. That's how to associate. And then there's the result of that is cleansing takes place and attraction for Krishna takes place. Attraction for Krishna awakens. I'll check on the numbers of those verses and let you know. Anything else? Yes?
Just a qualification for Maharaj and Pandit Maharaj's question. What does it feel like intending to greet Krishna?
What does it feel like when chanting?
Yeah, like the first, I've heard from Pandit Maharaj a lot of times to try to have this intention to greet Krishna when starting our chanting or japa, and I want to. It's just very conceptual. I'm like, okay.
Well, you know, like anything, it starts conceptual until it's, you know, before it's experiential. It's a direction, you know. Instead of like this question of doership, instead of okay, I'm going to please Krishna. You know, that's, you know, that we're accustomed to the doership mentality. it's different. It's prayerful. How am I going to please Krishna? That's like ridiculous. So it's then it becomes something other than doership. It becomes a prayer, a calling, you know, a yearning. But that's sankalpa. It is, you know, from the pendant to the independent. I'm requiring your mercy that I can do something that will be pleasing to you. And the very mentality of humility and prayerfulness is pleasing. Mission accomplished. What does it feel like? It feels like there's that the connection is real. It's not just notional. It's experiential. But, you know, that comes from the application of the instruction. Last question. It's after 8 o'clock.
On Sunday in Baltimore Temple, waiting in the temple room, there were people sitting there, and I asked an old man to chant. Everyone was chanting, and so he said, I gave him mantra. He said, Krishna, Rama. Why are you separating Krishna and Rama? I'm not different from them, something like that he was saying. Old man can't speak properly, but his conception is, I've been chanting for 25 years. I realized that, you know, why do you separate Krishna Rama from me? Something like that he was saying. So, relating to what we were talking about, devotional service and ignorance, passion and weakness. So, that's where, which stage is ignorance?
It's right in the purport here.
he's thinking of himself to be one with God or something like that.
It's in the purple.
So what's the way out for him? Like,
does association.
He have
okay. Ground zero, right? to teach an old dog new tricks isn't easy. An older man who already thinks I've got my realization, then he comes into the association of devotees. He's going to stay stuck, most likely. No. Back in then. But something will happen. Something will go in. Through association, bhakti will enter. Okay, thank you very much. Prabhupada, please.
Jai.